All right, so here we are again. Boy, it's kind of an interesting Sunday. I had a topic all picked out, and then the world kind of went crazy again, or crazier this week, so I'll be getting to that. But it all ties in, so let me start by talking about what I had originally planned to talk about, which is a talk title called Treasure Yourself. Treasure Yourself, based on the reading that Hugh did, that he recorded from the book Wild Mercy by Mira Bystar. It's funny, I've been in the quarantine, I haven't had a lot of extra time, but in some of the spare time that I have had, I've been looking at media bias. I've actually been studying it. Because when you get the numbers from the COVID-19 pandemic, they seem to be spun in very different ways depending on who is giving you the information. So I started researching media bias, and one of the things they said when looking for bias is to look for hyperbolic speech. That's like words that are really dramatic and words that are big and sometimes exaggerated. An example of hyperbolic speech that we might take for granted is something like stock market plummets, right? We've all heard that one before, stock market plummets, where if I was writing that headline, I might say something like, the money's gone a little funny, it's given us a better opportunity to look at our relationship with finances. You know, as I said in the church, sometimes the finances take a little dippity-doo-dah, and again, we reinvent ourselves in the context of that. But what I noticed as I started studying media bias more and more was noticing the bias that we humans carry around with us, our tendency towards hyperbolic speech or very dramatic speech. Things like, that devastated me when I got a pimple, you know? Things like that. And I think that some of the worst dramatic speech is the speech that we tell ourselves about our unworthiness, the criticisms that we give ourselves, the shameful thoughts that we have about ourselves. You know, with the hyperbolic speech, the exaggeration and the biases in the media, I think sometimes people are doing that out of fear, and that there's this collective fear that if we just know what could go wrong and make it really bad, then maybe we can do something about it. And it's the same thing, I think, in the way that we talk about ourselves. If I can just criticize myself or shame myself enough, then maybe somehow I'll be better someday. And that doesn't work very well. You may have noticed that it just doesn't work very well. So what I'm suggesting today is that it is urgent for us to stop that behavior. It is urgent for us to treasure ourselves because the world needs us. The world needs us to shine our light. The world needs us to come alive and be the goodness that we are. And the world needs our treasuring mercy, our treasuring grace in all things. It's funny because, you know, when I was thinking about how do we treasure ourselves, I was wondering, is that something that we're really taught? You know, I think somewhat, sometimes, nowadays perhaps, we're taught to like ourselves, that we should actually like ourselves. Some religions even teach that we should like ourselves. Some don't. But to actually treasure ourselves. It seems like that some might feel that that's being egocentric in a way, but really, is it? You know, I listened to a thing by Rupert Spira the other day, and he was talking about, this woman was saying, well, am I God? And he's saying, it's probably easier to hear if you say, I am pure awareness. That it's not blasphemous to say that I am pure awareness, but if you say that I am not awareness, I am outside of awareness, I am out of the purity of love, then that is actually blasphemous. So is it blasphemous to say I am not a treasure created in the image and likeness of God? And is it more true to say I am a treasure, I am a hidden treasure that longs to be known, so I create my world around me so that I may know myself? I think that's the truth, And that's the truth. We, for lack of opportunity, for just the way that our brains are made, because we tend to have a negative bias, that's the truth that sets us free, but it's the truth that we sometimes ignore. And so it is. So, in terms of thinking how to actually treasure ourselves, how do we do that? It's another funny thing that I've noticed is that sometimes in religions, particularly in New Thought religions, we're taught to treasure ourselves by doing very assertive affirmations, and sometimes the affirmations are a little pressured. I am whole, perfect, and complete, right? You are, and wholeness is not just the parts that you like about yourself. Wholeness are the parts that you or others might call flawed. So that's why forgiveness is important. Forgiveness is a paradox, and paradoxes are usually grounded in spiritual truth. Spiritual paradoxes tend to be true. I haven't encountered one yet that isn't. If we are willing, as it said in the reading, to go to, say, a website, or to go to our spiritual confessor, whether it's somebody outside of ourselves or somebody within ourselves, if we are willing to say, you know, I didn't handle that very well, or I had a challenge with that, or that was difficult for me, and just to hear it and say it out loud without shaming ourselves, with just acknowledging it, it's a wonderful thing. And it works. It works. It shouldn't work. Listing the things that are wrong with you shouldn't work, but I know that it's one of my superpowers, that I have a lot of stuff that is flawed within me, and when I actually acknowledge it, I feel so much more powerful and so much more sane. It reminds me a little bit of The Wizard of Oz, you know, that our flaws and our things that we don't like about ourselves and the mistakes that we've made are like a little man behind a curtain pulling levers, right? Pulling levers and making this gigantic bulbous head saying things like, I am Oz, great and terrible, you are terrible, you're a bad person. And if we pull the curtain aside, and we see that it's just a little voice, a little chatty voice that may or may not be true, then we shine the light on it and we can evaluate it and make a new choice. And as it said in the reading, we can see that we are not substantially better than anybody else, and we're not really more flawed than anybody else. We're all just in this human divine condition. That, I think, is the central teaching of the Christian faith that is often ignored by non-mystical Christians, is that we are all human and divine, and the power of that, the power of being able to recognize our divinity while also holding our humanity, is immense. It's a treasure. And so doing the practice of forgiveness helps us treasure ourselves. All forgiveness is self-forgiveness. So whether you're forgiving yourself or someone else, it's all self-forgiveness. One of the practices that I use is the Ho'oponopono prayer. I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, I thank you. I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, I thank you. And that's a prayer where you're talking to your higher being to forgive your lower being, right? Even if someone has done you wrong, you still say it, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, I thank you. And it's powerful, it works. It shifts things in ways that I can't understand. I do it whenever I feel blocked creatively. Even if I feel like I think I've forgiven everybody, I still do it. And lo and behold, little aspects of myself that I haven't forgiven or people in my life that I haven't forgiven pop up when I say, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, I thank you. So I hope you all do that. Hope all y'all do that, because I'm going to be doing it too. A lot. It's really needed right now. Another aspect of treasuring oneself, I think, is the ability to hold the third force. I know that there are probably some new folks listening on Facebook, watching on Facebook, that may not know that we talk a lot about the third force in this center, so I'll try and explain it the best I can. There have been huge books written on it, but I'll just try and give you the Reader's Digest version, or shorter, postage stamp version if possible. So the third force says that if there's ever a conflict or a challenge, that there is an affirming factor that's saying yes, and there is a denying factor that says no. And the two of them are colliding against each other. But then if we give them a little bit of space, there's a third reconciling factor, the third force, that takes those two factors and creates something brand new that is neither yes nor no, that is neither yes or no, that is better than a compromise. And that is something that we couldn't have thought up in our human minds. And so many people want to reject the denying factor and say that the denying factor is a bad thing. I want this thing, and this thing is getting in my way. But holding the third force is like saying, no, this denying factor is here for me. This is here to cause me to go deeper. My husband, Hugh, came up with a great analogy for the third force, which I like, that I'll share with you. He was talking about gardening and how a plant wants to grow. A plant just wants to grow. But then the gardener comes in and he denies that growth by pruning. And the plant may be saying, no, no, I want to grow. Why are you cutting off parts of me? But you prune the plant and the plant comes back more beautiful, more shapely than it was before. It was helpful when we were talking about the church service. You know, as we do our slow crawl towards reopening, we're going to be changing some things, and sometimes people don't like change. And so the city, the government is saying, you can't do this. And we're saying, but we want to do this. But what if we were to hold those two tensions and see what greatness could come out of that? And what if there's something in your life that you want to do, but somebody else is saying, I can't do this, you can't do this, and what if you could just hold that in the spaciousness of the third force of reconciliation, and see what wants to emerge? It's an amazing practice. And again, I have to say that it has always worked in my life, but I have to be willing to do it. That's the thing. Dang it, that's the thing. I have to be willing to sacrifice my need for things to be a certain way. I have to be willing to cultivate a certain amount of detachment, and I have to be willing to hold that third space, that third force, and see what spirit wants to allow to emerge. So how is that treasuring ourselves? Well, it opens us up to infinite possibilities. It keeps us out of that rut that we have been in for most of our lives, whether it's a neural groove in our brains or whether it's a rut, a pattern of behavior, of opposition. It moves us into the place where we see that anything that we once thought was against us is actually for us. It is there for our awakening. The resistance actually promotes growth. The pruning, as the pruning promotes growth, the resistance promotes growth. It awakens us to the magnificence of the kingdom of heaven that is here on earth and that is taking place in every single one of us. And that we are one of the treasures, one of the emeralds, one of the rubies, one of the diamonds, one of the sapphires in that kingdom of heaven. Again, we have to do the work in order to realize it. And then the third way to treasure ourselves. The third way that I notice to treasure ourselves, to treasure myself, and this is not going to be a surprise to anybody who comes here very often, who's here a lot. Guess what it is? Acts of kindness. Acts of kindness. Oh my God, acts of kindness. What a surprise. Yes, so acts of kindness are a way to treasure ourselves. Because when we are kind to another, we recognize that we actually have a lot to give. You know, our friend Nipun Mehta, who's up there in the choir loft, staring at me, I might add. He is the stariest cardboard figure I've ever seen in my whole life. But anyway, he tells about people that live in the slums in India, and they have nothing. They have what we would call nothing, and yet they still give a plant with a piece of scripture written on a piece of paper by it, or they still give a smile, or there's a rickshaw driver that drives without charging a fee. He just says, pay it forward for the next person. So when we are able to do an act of kindness, It affirms something in us. It affirms our worth as it affirms the other person's worth. And most of all, it affirms that there is only one of us here, because the giver and the lines between giver and receiver get blurred. And that we are both treasures, that we are all treasures in the kingdom of heaven, here on earth, within us. One of the joys of treasuring ourselves is that it doesn't stop with treasuring ourselves. It moves into treasuring all beings. And given what is happening in the world right now with the killing of George Floyd and the riots, I asked on Facebook, I've been posting a question on Facebook every week for the congregation to answer. And the question was, what will you do to treasure all of humanity? Now, I'm not going to read all of the answers, but I do have a method to select a few, a socially distanced method to select a few to read. So this is Chris's favorite part of the service, so bear with me. Chris is, thank you. I'm going to pick out three answers to read that are not in Chris's grip. One, two, and three. Okay. Thank you, Chris. Good. All right. Oh, there goes Tom's check. Okay, sorry. Okay. That's Chris's favorite part of the service. I think we should give him a round of applause, right? Okay, yeah, there you go. Good job, Chris. Show of thumbs at home for Chris. Okay. So what would you do to treasure all beings? What will you do to treasure all beings? Joanne says that she will ask, what would love do when responding to all beings? What would love do? Kat says that she would pray to see God, see others as God sees them. And we had a lot of answers that were like this. Seeing as God sees, seeing the face of God in everybody, even if they're different from us. And Lucky wrote, listen and believe and honor people when they share their experiences that are different from hers. If you get a moment, and go ahead and read the posts on Facebook on our group page for the answers to that question. They are so beautiful. And once again, I think I probably say this every week, but once again, they reassure me of the quality of consciousness that we're cultivating here and the beauty of the people that attend this church or that don't attend this church but are just interested in what we have to say. It is an amazing experience to be in partnership with all of you, especially in this time. I've also been talking about a bit about how every week I come up with somebody, at least one person in the congregation who has inspired me. And I want to read something from Anna Soberanis that she posted on Facebook, and this has to do with George Floyd, the killing of George Floyd. So Anna wrote, my neck is sore. I can't turn it fully to the right or to the left. Years of tension locked into bone and cartilage that have stiffened like my perspectives. I don't know if George Floyd's neck was stiff before a Minneapolis police officer kneeled on it. I wonder if the officer heard a crunch and a tear, or if he just relished in the terror of a black man prone on the street. There must have been little pebbles in the asphalt, little pieces of rock that made their way into Mr. Floyd's left cheek. But rips in the skin are not as painful as being denied your breath, your worth, your life force. I chanted a call, the sacred sound that escorts the soul unencumbered to the light of the cosmos. I have to believe Mr. Floyd will be treated with divine blessings and respect in the ethereal realms that have awaited him, a kind of karmic payback for being treated as less than human on earth. And the white officer who has a name, a family, a community, his life will never be the same. Two lives are always lost at the crossroads of violence. I wonder if the officer was a Christian. Does his house adorn a crucifix on the wall as a reminder that Jesus died for our sins? Jesus died again today. And I recognize that Jesus may die tomorrow for my sins if I don't stay conscious of every mean bone in my body. Let's mind our interiors. It's the least we can do for Mr. Floyd. That's from one of our beloved center members who touched me so deeply with her writing, and I hope that she touched you as well. You know, I feel that I should say something about this from a spiritual perspective, although it feels new to me and I'm still sitting in the resonance of it and meditating on it, and I probably have more questions than answers. But I am going to share with you what I've been thinking, and I don't want to miss anything, so I'm going to use my notes here. For one thing, I'm also speaking about it because one of the interfaith ministers asked all of the local ministers to say a little something about this today to raise awareness and to bring forth greater hope and healing in a situation that seems impossible. So watching the video, the death filled me with despair at the cruelty. And yet I know that I also have to sit in the question of asking myself, will I let the despair immobilize me? And I don't tend to go to anger, but will anger lead others to regrettable actions that don't solve anything? I also contemplated the idea of systemic racism. That has been a word that's been floating around for a while, and I actually haven't spent a lot of time thinking about it, but I did start thinking about it in terms of what we teach here, in that, you know, we talk about how your thoughts create your neural pathways and they create your bodies. And I remember a couple of weeks ago I was talking about how when I washed my hands and put on gloves at a homeless shelter where I was serving, immediately my hands went like this, like I had just scrubbed into an OR, because that was a memory that was in my body. And the physical memory of slavery and the physical memory of slave ownership is not that old, and it's taking a while to work it out. And on top of slavery, there was a lot of injustice after slavery was lifted. There was Jim Crow, and there was the segregation and not the right to vote. So all of that, I think, is still playing it out in our bodies, and I think the more that we can be aware of that and how we're participating in it, even simply by asking the question, how am I participating in racism? I think that's a powerful place to be, very powerful place to be. The other thing is that I do think it is important to keep hopeful. Despite that fact that there still is racism here in the United States and all over the world, things are better than they were. When you look at the rights that other races, non-white races, have, the rights have increased significantly, and yet there's still a ways to go. And the ways to go are subtle. So again, we have to continue to keep hope, but also continue to look at ways that we can be more just in our approach. That brings me to the next point, which is holding the third force. Also, hold the tension. Hold the tension, knowing that things are better, but that we can do so much better. That we can do so much more. You know, look at the subtleties and the nuances of all situations. You can't hear them most of the time because people are screaming at each other. The news is screaming at us, and you can't hear it. You know, I tend to look at a lot of different news sources when I get into a topic, because I feel like I have a responsibility to look at both sides of any situation. And there are definitely two polar opposite sides, but there are so many nuances in between. You know, I'm going to talk about the riots in a minute, but I was listening to a radio show this morning driving in when they were talking about, the riots. It's showing that there's a lot of black people that are burning down stuff, but they were saying that it's that there are opportunists that are coming in saying, wow, there's looting going on, I want to be part of that too. You know, and it's not, when you look at the numbers of people that are actually rioting, it's not that many compared to the people that are protesting. That being said, though, there is a difference between a protest and a riot. And I think that a protest is completely, completely valid. And I listened to something yesterday that explained some of the despair and anger and rage as to what it might feel like to be an African-American person in this society and how that can lead to riots and aggressive behavior and rage. And yet, I think that that's going to hurt us, hurt all of us. Don't mean to say us and them, but it's going to hurt all of us in the long run. And of course, I'm influenced by my tendencies towards Gandhi, having spent time in India at the Gandhi ashram and studied him a bit. And, you know, this rioting with that's been going on, that is still going on. I thought about the story from the lore of Gandhi. It's in the movie, but it's been a while since I've seen that movie, and I kind of forgot about it, but Nipun reminded me of it, that there was a time, you know, Gandhi was doing his nonviolent, non-cooperation movement in India, and the Indians were protesting the British rule in a square, and the British soldiers and police and Indian police officers shot some of them. And so the crowd of Indians became enraged, and they went to the police department, and they burned it down, and they killed 22 people. And when Gandhi heard that, he said, we're not ready. We're not ready. We have to shut down this nonviolent approach and go back into silence and meditate. And he didn't say hold the third force, but I know that's what he was doing. Hold the third force and see where we are guided to move into a place where we are acting from compassion and love, harmlessness, because that's the only thing that's going to bless everything. You know, another one of my favorite books, The Gentle Art of Blessing, where the author, Pierre Pradhan, talks about how when he helped support several African regimes take over another African regime, and he said almost every time the regime that took over the first regime was within months doing the same dark things that the first regime was doing. And so he recommends blessing everything. And I recommend holding all of this with the nuances, with the subtleties, and doing the spiritual work around it. I might suggest that we do the work of forgiveness. It is said that the officer had his knee on George Floyd's neck for close to 9 minutes. What if we were to do 9 rounds of Ho'oponopono every day? In honor of George Floyd, in honor of people of any race that we have felt against. I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. I thank you. What if we were to hold the third force, hold the dynamic tension, and knowing that there is space for reconciliation, what I said before, that things are better, but they can be so much better if we would listen, as Lucky said in the paper that I pulled, if we would listen and refrain from reacting, but knowing that that which seems against our opinion is there to awaken both of us. What if we could do that, or meditate on that for 9 minutes a day? And what if also we could do 9 acts of kindness? 9 acts of kindness. I've got my first 2 planned for this afternoon. And it's about honoring graduates who are not getting their graduation, 2 graduates in my community. They happen to be of a skin color that is different than mine, a different race. And I thought about asking, should we do 9 acts of kindness? To someone that is different than us. But I decided not to limit it, because everybody is different than us, and everybody is the same as us. So that's what I'm thinking. It's unformed, it's unfinished, but I trust that all of us are wrestling with this and moving through the mystery, and I would much prefer to be in the mystery than think that I have all the answers. I do have one good thing, though. In terms of reconciliation, in prayers for global unity, in prayers for a greater global outreach for this center, where we can be a source of light and love to the world around us. I just heard from, again, my friend Nipun, the stariest cardboard figure up there, Nipun, who has a global service organization. He and I had decided to co-host a sacred circle together for 4 weeks starting in June. And I just found out that there are over 200 people in it in more than 20 countries. And honestly, I'm sure that they all have cares and worries like all of us. But I know that they also have hope, and that their hope will infuse me, and that the hope of this community that I carry with me always will infuse them. And that we're doing the work. We're doing the work of peace and love and justice and healing. And that is indicative of treasuring ourselves. Let us treasure ourselves now, and let us pray.